Sorry for the music interlude there for a minute. I'm still dealing with the water police here in Central California, so I'm out of breath having run up from a project that we have underway. For those that don't know, the local water authority here in Central California thought that it would be just a swell idea to take any property owner that had anything more than an acre's worth of land, and to 1 month from the next to reduce their ability to buy water from the city by 80%, some even 85%, which means they're going to give you enough water to allow most everything in your yard to die slowly over time. And that if you exceed the amount of water they're willing to allocate to you, which is approximately 20% of what you used the same month the previous year, you pay a ever-escalating fine. You know, for example, last month I was fined $2,000, even though I reduced my water usage by 30%. The previous month I paid a $750 fine, even though I reduced my water usage 60%. So you're being fined for using a lot less water. And so what I'm attempting to do is to make myself water independent so that I can truck in water, store it in large storage tanks, and make myself as independent from the city authority as absolutely possible, because it's a realization that city authority and state authority and federal authority have this overriding desire to control, to fine, to abuse, to allocate resources so that they have dictatorial influence over people's lives. So in this particular case, I'm constantly orchestrating the remedy. In this case, it's water, but, you know, tomorrow it may be gasoline. The year after that, it may be internet access. A year after that, it may be electricity. It's going to always be something as the government tries to have more and more incursion, more and more control over people's lives. I promised in this segment we're going to return our attention to Paul. I'd like to commence where we ended our program on Friday. There we were talking about the fact that Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, gave us an exacting tool to deploy to determine whether or not someone who was claiming to speak for God was actually inspired by Yahweh himself. And we find the first two of those tests in Dabbatim 13. The second test is in Dabbatim 18. Now, before we even examine these tests in future programs, we will go into great detail on every word of the test. But what I want you to know for now is a bit of perspective. Moshe was speaking for Yahweh. Moshe also took dictation from Yahweh and literally spoke in first person. He didn't, but Yahweh spoke in first person through Moshe. Yahweh actually revealed his Torah in his own voice to the children of Israel, and he provided its summation on the 10 statements that he etched in stone with his own hand, writing them for us. The fact that the two tests on how we can determine whether or not someone is speaking for Yahweh appear within the Torah itself tells you that not only is the Torah Yahweh's testimony, but that the Torah is the standard upon which anyone who claims to speak for God must be held accountable. So if you are contradicting the Torah, you're obviously running afoul of Yahweh's test to determine who was and is not speaking for him. Now, Moshe in the Dabbatim isn't speaking, isn't a throughput device for Yahweh's testimony. In Bereshit Genesis, Yahweh speaks in first person. And in Shemoth, Names, Exodus, Yahweh speaks in first person. And Korah called out Leviticus, Yahweh speaks in first person. But when it comes to Devarim, it's Moshe that is speaking in first person. And what Moshe is doing is saying, this is what God conveyed to us. This is what it means. This is how you apply it to your life. This is what's the most essential aspect of Yahweh's Torah teaching and what it means to you in your as you walk through life. So it is a very different perspective. And the perspective is Moshe's, after having heard what Yahweh had to say, had thought about it. He wanted to share his understanding of Yahweh's Torah, and he was inspired by Yahweh to do so. And so in that context, now you have Yahweh conveying through Moshe the means that can be deployed to determine not only if Moshe was speaking for him, but whether anybody in the future who had claimed to speak for God was doing so. So you can take Muhammad's Quran and you can compare it to this test, and you will find that no, Muhammad did not speak for Yahweh. You can take Paul's writings, compare them to what the Torah says in this test, and you'd say, no, it's obvious. Paul did not speak for Yahweh. He was not inspired by Yahweh. Hello, Frank. My good friend Frank has called in from Washington. Before we go through the Devarim 13 and 18 tests, I'll bet you are as pleased as I am that God actually provided us a means to know whether or not someone was speaking for him or not.
No way of escape.
Yes.
I apologize for getting into the... I meant to get you called while you were still out of breath in the water segment.
Yeah, you can tell I ran down from the meeting that I had with my my team that is installing my self-sufficiency on water.
Right. I could hear that, and I was thinking, okay, I'll quick dial in, but I was a little slower than I thought. Anyway, as you were talking about that, I just thought I'd give you some of the reference we talked about before about what's going on in Washington State and organization called CitizensReviewOnline.org.
Uh-huh.
Actually, this came out, and this particular article was from SQUIM Washington, September 17, 2001. So it tells you how long this has been going on. Had uh-huh. many other correspondences since then. And it tells, anyway, there was approximately 300 people at the Guy Cole Convention Center in SQUIM, and they were all there to find out what Washington State Department of Ecology was doing about metering their private wells. And as it goes on and says in it, basically, it's just telling people that at this time we're not going to be putting meters on your wells or requiring them, but when we do, you will have to pay for them and provide the meters so that we can control your water to turn it on and off so that you only will use what we think you should use as compared to what you
make. I'd like to tie this into the Torah and see if you agree, Frank.
Okay.
I have, on my East Coast property, I have 7 or 8 wells. And we have paid to have a professional company who, by the way, was not willing to drill us. I mean, I'm a really nice guy. And I would have offered them a free lunch, offered them a cold beverage. I would have given them a hearty handshake and a letter of recommendation if they would come in and drill my wells for free. But no, they wanted cash money to drill those wells. And they provided a good service. They drilled the wells, and whatever water was available at whatever predetermined footage that we went down, I paid them. And then I paid them to hook up a pump at the bottom of the well. They were unwilling, the pump provider was unwilling to give me that pump for free. And then I hooked up a pressure tank to each of those wells so it would perform as effectively in whatever use I had. And then I also paid a company that provides filters to filter that water. And then I paid to have all the pipes connecting to the well into the specific use, whether into the home or into irrigation systems.
Right.
I paid for all of that. And you did too, right?
I did too. Several wells.
Yeah. Okay. And now the local government authority says, we're not going to reimburse you for any of the costs, but we are going to make you pay for the water that you're extracting, because your land really isn't your land, and the resources that's on or beneath your land doesn't belong to you. It belongs to us. Is that, as I understand it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how you're understanding it.
Okay. Now, when Yahoo decided he was going to offer participation in the covenant to us, who pays to the price for us to be considered perfect so that we can join Yahoo's family?
He does.
So we get all the benefits, and we're not taxed in any possible way?
Nope, and he gives us all the rights.
So it sounds to me that Yahweh's deal is a lot better than the deal that your government is providing you up there in Washington State. We'll be back with Frank and Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we return to the story on the great water caper in America, news is in that the three kidnapped boys in Israel that were kidnapped by Hamas have been found in a field north of Hebron, dead. So expect an extraordinarily swift and severe response from Israel. I don't know what I would do in the case of Benjamin Netanyahu, but he has to respond strongly. It'll be interesting to see how the world responds to his actions. Frank, if in the way we've set up America is that in terms of supplies of water, of natural gas, in terms of electricity, and even internet and cable television, those sorts of things, that they're either government monopolies in the sense of utilities, or they're established as private businesses that pay exorbitant rights to municipalities who regulate their use of their access to provide the ability to provide, for example, cable television. You pay a huge amount of money to the local municipality. If your job is to supply water, what is your job?
Supply water.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Is there a shortage of water on the planet? Has the planet somehow over the last 3 billion years lost a lot of water so we should be concerned that there just isn't not enough water to go around anymore?
I think it's impossible to lose it. Something about a closed system.
Yeah, it's a closed system. There's no shortage of water on the planet.
That's in fact, right. Okay. Never has been, never will be.
Okay. And so the job of a water district is to, what was that again?
Never has been, never will be.
Oh. Okay. And the job of the water district is to supply water.
Supply water.
Okay. So tell me how it makes sense that this amalgamation between quasi-public and private industry would charge its customers egregious penalties for its failure to supply water. Why does that make any sense?
Because I want your money.
And I want to control what you do in your life.
Right. I want your money, and I want to control
right.
how much you use, and then the more you use, the more I'm going to charge you.
Right.
And
in fact,
if you don't use it, I'm going to charge you.
In fact, last year and also a couple of years ago, Colorado, which is a watershed for much of Southern and Central California, they were under flood conditions. I mean, enormous damage done to floods. Minnesota, which is not in our watershed, but Minnesota is currently under a state disaster condition because of floods. You all haven't had I know you live in a drier part of Washington State, but it isn't all of a sudden become sunny and bright in Seattle, is it?
No, they're all complaining. It's been very wet, and as well aware of the OSA slide.
It's been very wet. And you had a terrible landslide there in Washington State because it got so wet. So it's simply a matter of distributing water. You've got too much of it. We have too little of it. There's this invention that people came up with right around 3000 BCE. It's a C word. They call it a canal. Ever heard of those?
Oh, yeah. We have one a stone's throw away from the farm.
So why wouldn't, instead of the government paying people not to work, instead of the government paying trillions to send people off to break other countries, why wouldn't the government, working with the private industry, build canals?
And reservoirs.
Yeah, because reservoirs have a dual purpose. They become recreational sites, and so they give people things to do, money-making opportunities for lots of businesses. And so reservoirs are good. Canals are really nifty.
Yeah.
So why are we not building canals and reservoirs? Why, when now the reservoir that we get water from this community is drying up, why isn't there someone in there dredging it so that when you have a bumper year, we could hold enough water for through the dry years?
We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yeah, wasn't it Joseph that predicted how Egypt would go through dry years and then wonderful years in terms of water flow and made adjustments for that? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is government's desire to control. That's why they have laws. That's why they impose their edicts. And freedoms and our wealth are confiscated by government and its never-ceasing desire to control. Would you agree, Frank? Hello, Frank.
Sorry about that. I was on mute there.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that. I agree with you. I'm living on a place where I was born and raised on the farm, and over my short lifetime of watching reservoirs being built, not being built, and mm-hmm. not including a plan for future growth, amazes me that it's actually been restricted by mostly EPA, but government organizations, when the natural resources that we have in this land, not just in the land where I am, but all over the country, there are masses of water. All we need to do is create the storage facilities, the irrigation canals, or aquifers,
exactly,
if you want to call them,
and
supply the water to the appropriate areas. The natural resources alone that were hindering the American people from being able to have the gross national profit is being hindered by our own government.
Correct. Across the board. The infrastructure in America is disastrous.
Right.
You know, once upon a time we could build infrastructure, and we did for a while, and now we can't even maintain it. And that's really one of the very few things you want government to do. And it doesn't even have to do it itself. It should sponsor it with private industry. But to build and maintain infrastructure, and it can't seem to do so. During the break we were talking about Joseph, and Joseph had the interpreted Pharaoh's dream of the seven fat cows and the seven lean cows, and he said, you know, this just means that the Nile is going to either have too high or too going to have climate change with the Nile, and that climate change is going to have 7 years where you're going to have really lousy harvests, and 7 years you're going to have really good harvests. We're going to have the really good harvests before the really bad harvest. But here I got a plan. Why don't we create reserves and stores and take advantage of the seven really good years so we'll get through the seven bad years?
Boy.
So, yeah. Yeah. And that was, you know, what, about 4,000 years ago. And so 4,000 years ago, there's a story in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms about Joseph coming up with a plan as to how you deal with this. And it's, and yet here today, we think we are so sophisticated 2,000 years later, we can't deal with it.
Right. Well, and it's the same. It's not just water. It's electricity. It's
right.
Anything that has a meter on it that can now be shut off by the
right.
appropriate supply people.
Right.
Which generally, if it's hydroelectric, they're
yeah.
primarily all government
yeah.
operated.
Let me throw one thing at you. You mentioned that it was the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that is not only prohibiting the creation of more electrical energy, the distribution of that energy, more reservoirs and canals, aqueducts for water. The EPA is playing the game that no one seems to understand, which is they are doing everything they can to prevent anything from being done that would create an adequate supply of resources, and yet they're the ones who are saying that we all need to conserve, we all need to conform to their view, which is that you know, the earth is a mother goddess, and that we're all parasites on it, and we ought to just do with less.
Yeah.
And they're making us do with less because they're preventing the development of energy production and energy extraction and energy and water distribution. They're playing both sides.
Right, they are. Well, and there's more bureaucracy deeper in the midst of it than just the EPA,
yeah.
because when you really start to read the letters, and of course we have the Department of Energy, also
right.
part of some of the meetings that were going on here, we're talking about the meters were to meet the AWWA standards and the USBR standards. And they did go on to explain that USBR stood for the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, but they wouldn't explain what the AWWA organization was. How many secret organizations do we have?
Does the government have, and how many acronyms? You know, by the way, does in the Torah, in terms of its seminal purpose, which is to have us participate in the covenant, do you find that that like the U.S. government, that the Torah is restrictive, is trying to deprive you of access to things that you need and want?
It actually is the keys to unlock the doors to every freedom you could have ever imagined, and even those that you can't imagine.
So Yahweh's offer is, I'm going to pay the price myself. I'm going to invite you to party with me, to enter my home, and to spend forever with me. I'm going to give you every means of enrichment, and I'm going to ask nothing from you other than you pay attention to and meet with me and actually listen to what I have to say. And that's one offer, and that's God's offer. And then mankind's government offer is, we want to control, we want to restrict, we want to tax, we want to confiscate.
And I like Yah's entire plan much better. And when we really see the Torah and the fullness of what it's really offering us is so much freedom, so much restoration. And I can't even come up with all the words right at this time.
Right.
The Torah is the life-giving document
yeah.
that actually puts life back into every aspect of a person's life.
Yeah, its whole purpose is to do a handful of things. One is to liberate us.
Right.
And when the government's purpose is to enact laws that control us, the Torah's purpose is to liberate us. The government wants to empower itself by taking power and authority and freedom away from the individual. The whole covenant's purpose is to empower us, to make us more than we would otherwise be. I mean, one offer and the other, you know, human institution, Yahweh, I mean, they're night and day in terms of their difference.
Right. And you would think that as citizens of the world, I'll just use that terminology so that we don't get too much on one team or the other. As citizens of the world, shouldn't we all have been able to figure out by looking at our history, looking at the failure of countries and governments and, Rome, Greece, on and on and on and on, all the, the things that happened, what caused the countries or the governments to go downhill, the economies,
Yeah, you look at it in Daniel 7, 8, and 9. And Yahweh inspiring Daniel to be able to view the rise and fall of Babylon. Or in Yirmiyah, where almost the whole book is devoted to why God despises Babylon and what Babylon represents. And then you look at the next menace, which was the Persian Empire, and God, what he has to say about them, and then Alexander the Great, who was not great, my friends. I mean, he was an absolute slime of a human being. I mean, he was vicious, repulsive, megalomaniac. And then God says, all of those beasts, they're really bad. Government and militarism and these economic schemes and the religions that permeate the politics of those countries. But there is no beast on earth, according to God, that even is remotely as vicious or as conniving or all-encompassing as the beast that was and is Rome.
Right. And why haven't we learned our lessons from the history that has gone before us? If it didn't work then, and it didn't work for multiple different governments, if you will, why in the world would anybody try to keep implementing it for any other reason except for the greed that comes to try to control and confiscate.
Okay. I agree. Or say if you're a Christian and you have in your book that you think is the inerrant word of God, and you can read that God is telling Daniel that Rome is the most vicious, conniving, deadly, far-reaching, condemning beast in all of human history. And then you read in the 13th chapter of Paul, where Paul is saying, in his letter on behalf of Rome to Romans, he's saying that you have to be not only submissive to your government and surrender to your government, but that God established the government of Rome. So one place God is saying it's the beast and the worst influence in your life, and Paul is saying, oh, no, it's God's way of positively influencing your life.
Well, I guess when you are drugged and whitewashed, it's real hard to know what truth is or to use your head to figure it out. And, so I was there for 30, 40 years, and it took me a long time to figure it out. But come on, wake up.
Wake up. It's black and white. I mean, and Daniel, God goes out of his way to say that Rome is unlike any other beast. It is by far the worst, and that it's that its influence never died. It didn't die with the sacking of Rome. He said its influence was ongoing. It was pervasive. It was worldwide. It was never ending, at least while the earth exists, and that it is the most menacing of all beasts, which means it's associated with Satan. And then Paul writes his most famous letter on behalf of Rome, telling everyone that, the Roman government, God put into place. So it was the same Roman government that God put into place that, of course, destroyed his temple, destroyed his people, circumcised hundreds of thousands of them, salted the land, and renamed it. Same Roman government, of course, right?
Sounds to me like we're repeating history today, what America is doing.
Yeah.
Sounds to me like it's the same.
Yep. In fact, America is playing Rome today. There's no nation on earth more consistent with the vicious, overreaching nature of Rome, the militaristic nature of Rome, than the United States of America.
And, of course, we all pay our taxes in so that it can be done like that. But yet we have poverty, we have crime, we have all kinds of situations that are at home that aren't being addressed with the very money that actually should have been intended to take care of those very situations.
Yeah, it's a painful situation. By the way, America is not the only incarnation of Rome. So is the Roman Catholic Church and Eastern Orthodox Christianity. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Based upon the discussion that Frank and I have been having, we've had Jake call in from Idaho. And I understand, Jake, you want to know whether or not this would be the time to flee to Canada. Do I have that right?
Yes, sir. Do I need to start applying for my passport?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It might have been 4 or 5 years ago. But when the U.S. government began to have deficits over 100% of GDP, and as part of the huge giveaways that didn't work at the beginning of the Great Recession, they changed the U.S. tax code, and they did a lot of things that were very underhanded. And one of the things they did is that, you know that if you die, you have to pay a gargantuan death tax. Your heirs do, even though they've already taxed all your money, and whatever you have left over is what you got to keep after they taxed you to death. But they will tax you once again when you die. There is a expatriate tax that if you were to go to Idaho, the federal government would be will confiscate 50% of your savings. So they make it extraordinarily difficult. And also, the U.S. government says if you want to go to another country, you have to continue to pay U.S. taxes for, I think it's like 5 years, even though you're no longer a resident of the country, even though you're no longer getting any benefits from the country, even though you left the country because you were being taxed to death, they'll continue to tax you for the next 5 years, even though you don't make any money in that country.
Well,
how about that?
In light of separating yourself from this particular country and other activities, it seems like a small price to pay.
Yeah, and you know the separation from country and the separation from religion doesn't mean that you have to move to the Bahamas or Costa Rica or New Zealand, because you know there's another country there. What it really means is that you're not one of those that is pledging allegiance to your country. You're not flying your flag of your country. You're not saluting the flag. You're not pretending like your military is providing you with your freedom. And that you make every attempt not to be dependent on your country or believe that your country is providing you with your freedom and prosperity and all of those sorts of things. So it's more of an attitudinal thing to trust Yahweh and his Torah guidance over your country's legal standing. Isn't that how you interpret it as well, Frank?
Yes, and I also believe that there are still a lot of like-minded people, first of all, in America, mm-hmm. somewhere, that it would be a far safer place to be during tough times than it would to be under a foreign government. Which the people nor the government would have known the freedoms that we have had in America and the attitude of trying to help and support.
I think America is going to be an absolute unmitigated disaster within 15 years, total anarchy, not unlike what Nazi Germany was like. I do think there are better places to live now than America that are more opportunity, less taxation, more freedom, and less likely to continue to control people. I think Costa Rica is a good example. I think New Zealand is probably a good example of Chile may even be an example today. But there are places that are now better than America to live, but America has made it almost impossible for you to leave America unless you leave most everything behind.
Right.
So given that timeline, mm-hmm. what does young Yehudim have to think in terms of starting a family?
That's a really good question. And I've talked to my sons about this quite frequently. Yahweh and Yirmiyah has a very revealing statement, and it's consistent with his nature. that if you are what Yehudim means, which is related to Yah, if you are what Yisraelite means, which is an individual who engages and endures with God, if you're a member of the covenant family, then your minor children are considered members of the covenant family. And since our timeline right now is less than 20 years before Yahweh returns, when we have the Teruah harvest, which is going to occur much before that time is over, perhaps in as little as 14 to 15 years, that our young children will go with us. Yahweh views the children of covenant parents to be members of his covenant. So this is kind of the best time of all to bring children into the world if you're a member of the covenant, because it's the best of all worlds. You know that they will spend eternity with you. We'll be back tomorrow.